Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined today by a hated enemy, I guess. It's Blake Murphy of Raptors Republic. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. We're having a crossover episode. It's our first one. It's hopefully we do this more often. We like getting smarter people than us on the show.
So I feel like good. Mr. Peanut Butter. I just want to make the, what is this, a crossover episode? Joke over and over again. You shouldn't have let me do this. I'm gonna tear this podcast down from the inside.
Just infiltrate. There's a lot going on, man. This is a good time to be a Raptors fan, a Toronto basketball fan. It's pretty solid. Obviously, All-Star this weekend. We're gonna talk about that today. We've got a couple of reports. We got a DeMar DeRozan report from Mark Stein. We got a Thad Young report from also Mark Stein, I think. So we can talk about that. The Raps lost to the Wolves last night. We'll get into that a little bit. Talk about some of the All-Star events. Vince Carter hits his 16-year anniversary of his dunk contest win today. So I think we're going to rank his dunks from that contest and sort of talk about that. Also got a bone to pick with the Pistons jerseys from that time. Man, that was a weird era in jerseys. But we'll get to that. I first want to start off, though, talking to you about, you know, what every good radio show starts with, the weather. You've been privy to, like, the weather takes going on about, like, Toronto and how cold it's going to be and how terrible it's going to be. Like, wasn't it the exact same in New York last year?
Yeah, I've tried to avoid them the best I can, but that seems impossible. Yeah. Chris Bosch tweeted, it's cold, that is all, today. A lot of Americans, some who even aren't even coming here, were shocked at what the weather is going to be. I think Charles Barkley got asked about it and called the fact that it's been warm up to this point some bullshit. Yeah, I don't know. It's Toronto. It would be, I'd imagine it's equally cold in like Chicago, Boston, New York, Minnesota right now. Like you play a winter sport and your All-Star game's in February and some of your biggest markets are cold. Deal with
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah, I know, exactly. I saw Paul Flannery. He was like, it's the same in Boston, except there's less parties. So
yeah.
I mean, people will be fine. People have a good time. I have no doubt that it'll be
and
a pretty resounding success. It feels like this is going to be a pretty big weekend.
Yeah, and everything that anyone needs to go to, there are either shuttle buses or the path, or it's right on the subway line. It'll be fine. It's like a mild annoyance, but you know, it would have been different if the cabs actually went on strike and everyone was like outside waiting for Ubers and like trying to figure out streetcars and stuff like that. But for the small chunk of downtown that everyone's going to be operating in, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, the cab thing was probably going to be a nuisance, but at least that's been avoided. We're going to be done with the weather talk now. That's all there really is to it. Stop worrying about the weather, Americans. It'll be fine. So yeah, we're going to get into a whole bunch of stuff today. We'll be back in just a second here on The Headquarters. All right, welcome back to The Headquarters. Sean Woodley with Blake Murphy of Raptors Republic. Let's get into that Raptors loss last night to the Wolves. They lost, I believe, what was it, 115, 113 or something like that in Minnesota to a very, very bad Minnesota team. Karl Anthony Towns is that guy's something, man. Holy.
Yeah, he is. He's terrific. He looked like the best player in NBA history during that game. I mean, he's knocking down jumpers. He's swatting away really tough drives. He's dunking like crazy. He was a problem. The centers couldn't handle him, and then the Raptors switched power forwards onto him. Power forwards couldn't handle him. You know, he didn't look quite this good earlier in the year as his minutes were a little sheltered. Him and Gorgui Dieng have a nice little chemistry. Him and Nemanja Bjelica are a nice pair together, and really he's just really, really good. This is the best rookie season in like a long time so far. It's early still, but like he's got 30 something double doubles. He's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's insane. This whole draft class, man, it's been so much fun to watch. I think we did a podcast for another site like just before the draft last year, and I don't think we were as high on it as like we probably should have been, man. It's been a joy to watch these guys. Let's get into that loss a little bit more from the Raptors side, though. I mean, I don't know if it's something that you look a whole lot into. It feels like there was like a strange amount of people upset about it, but like it's the last game before the All-Star break. It was the last game of a road trip. I mean, they have a road game after the break against Chicago, but it barely counts as the road trip, I don't think. But it just seems like it was kind of a schedule loss almost, just because it's that last game. It's the hangover game. Like, it's, I don't know. I'm not worried about it. Some people seemed worried about it. Like, these things happen. It's no big deal.
Yeah, beyond that, I'm not worried about it at all. I thought it was the best the Wolves have played, at least offensively, in a really long time. Crazy what happens when you don't play Tayshaun Prince 25, 30 minutes on the offensive end. I thought the Wolves played really well. They were hungry the whole way. The Raptors obviously kind of took their foot off the gas in the second half. As much as some people are worried or like were hand-wringing about the officiating, which of all fan bases, Raptors fans have no right to complain about officiating. This is a team that for multiple seasons now has lived off of the whistle on the offensive end. But for me, this might actually be an okay loss in the long run, because, you know, Dwayne Casey after the game got to send the message, you guys aren't as good as you think you are. And even if that's not true, if that's perhaps unfair to the team, entering the All-Star break, having won 15 of 16, second in the East, a long time off, a party weekend at home, you know, there's still a chance, but there's perhaps less of a chance now that the Raptors come out of the break a little sluggish, a little fat and happy. This is a nice reminder heading into a long stretch off that, you know, 35 and 17 is only 35 and 17. It's not it's not 60 and 22. It's not a playoff series win. It's only what they've done so far, and there's a lot of work ahead. And I bet if you ask Dwayne Casey candidly, he'd probably say that, yeah, you know, taking that loss is tough, but in terms of a teachable moment and, you know, something he can carry into the All-Star break and the first couple games out of the All-Star break, it's probably not the worst thing that could happen.
I mean, we've seen it with Casey, like, in press conferences and everything all year. Like, he is hammering that point home relentlessly that they just aren't as good as they think they are. They're not a finished team yet. And yeah, I think I totally agree. Losing this game doesn't mean a whole lot in the long run, but it might be a bit of a good wake-up call. And like, it's not like everything that happened was bad. I mean, DeRozan had another fantastic game. Was 11 of 19 from the field, 10 of 13 from the line. Three for three from three, which is
not particularly strong defense, but you know,
I don't know. I'm choosing to focus on the 3 for 3 from three. That is, what's he shooting now? I'm going to look that up. I can't remember what he's shooting from three at this point, but yeah. So he's at 33.7%. If you had told me before the season he was going to be shooting almost league average, I definitely wouldn't have believed you, and I would have taken it 100 times out of 100. So
I honestly don't even care what percentage he hits, just that he hits enough that defenders have to think about it. Because every inch a defender gets up on him is an extra inch of advantage when he attacks the hoop.
100%. I mean, Terrence Ross, he had a weird game. He felt like he was chucking a little bit, which, I mean, it's cool to see that he has that confidence to do that. He hasn't really had that mentality for a long time, but it was cool to see him just kind of being like, I don't give a shit. I'm going to throw up this three. A couple of them were pretty impressive, and they went in. A couple were, you know, a bit ill-advised. But overall, like, I don't think there's much to glean from this game. Let's move on to a couple news notes from mostly Mark Stein. He's doing a lot of reporting on the Raptors these days. He reported today that in an interview that's going to air for ESPN's Meet the All-Stars on the weekend, that DeMar DeRozan says that it's going to be tough to pry him away from Toronto. I know you're on the record. You were on Sportsfeld, by the way. You are a podcast superstar. You were on Sportsfeld with those guys, and you mentioned that you think it's a bit better than 50-50 that he comes back to the Raptors. And I don't know, does this news change that at all? Do you think you're a little low on that estimation there?
No, I mean, I entered the season about 50-50. I'm probably somewhere around like 67-33 right now. You know, the thing is that things are going well. So every player and every organization that, you know, handles their business well, they're going to say things like this. Ujiri's going to say that they want DeRozan back. DeRozan's going to say he wants to be here. They probably mean it. I get the feeling that they're more earnest than most when they say those things. I believe that what DeRozan and Lowry have together matters. But like, things happen in free agency. Guys have left before when it looked like they were going to stay, not necessarily in Toronto, but everywhere. Mm-hmm. I'm not going further than like 70-30 until pen is to paper, because who knows what's going to happen and who knows what the Lakers pitch and who knows, you know, what Nike says about getting a signature shoe if he goes back to LA or something like that. Like, there are weird things that could factor in. And if Ujiri you know, say they enter the offseason and Ujiri doesn't want to give him the max and he plays hardball at a little below the max, you never know what can happen. I am pretty confident he's going to stay. His comments to Stein echo what he said all through the process. I'm not going to go all the way until pens to paper because stuff happens.
I think we've seen, like, this week in particular that weird shit happens all the time and we can never predict what's going to happen. So assuming anything is pretty stupid. I mean, the thing that I, you know, find more confidence in is just looking at the Raptors can offer him that fifth year, as we all know. And I think as you look around the league, you look at what happened in last year, in the offseason last year, I think that's really going to mean a lot. I mean, you see with guys like Marc Gasol right now and MKG, mostly Marc Gasol, like with that foot injury. I mean, how happy is he right now that he took the 5-year deal instead of getting a 1-1 and trying to capitalize when the cap goes up? Like, I think guys really, really value security and it's paramount for most guys. So I think that fifth year will mean a lot for DeMar, especially because who knows if his game ages that well. I don't really know unless he can figure out how to raise that percentage even more. But, you know, there are a lot of things keeping him here. The team is successful. They have this new BioSteel facility. You were there yesterday, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, give us the skinny, man.
So it is, I wrote about it today, Raptors Republic, to, you know, plug your competition here for a second. So
we'll bleep that.
It is a ridiculous facility. It's 68,000 square feet. There are two full basketball courts, six nets, you know, a giant weight room with Muhammad Ali quotes on the wall, hot tub, cold tub, underwater treadmill, all this stuff. Apparently, according to Masai Ujiri, DeRozan and Lowry have already snuck in once to get in some late night shots. The most impressive thing to me was the war room. It's technically like the IBM Raptors Insights Center, but I was in there long enough playing around with stuff that, like, I was getting looks like, hey, it's time to leave, man. It's so cool what they can do. Basically, all the data that they collect from a scouting perspective and a stats perspective, and once they get to that point, I'd imagine, like, from a biometric data perspective, all of that is at a finger's touch on these, you know, it's an entire wall of a room that's all, like, head height video screens and then a full table. They can, you know, bring up it within like 30 seconds. I created like a draft watch list, tried to trade Steph Curry to the Raptors with their own trade machine, brought up Klay Thompson's Instagram, saw the depth charts for all 30 teams. It's really cool how much information they have. And, you know, like the facility itself, these are great tools only if you use them properly. So all this information that they have at a moment's notice, you know, if their scouting department is bad, or, you know, their sports science team is off base with some of their stuff, none of it's going to help because they're going to have all this bad information at their fingertips. But what's encouraging to me about the center, about how the Raptors have approached things like analytics and sports science, you know, the NBA is a capped league and you can only spend so much on salaries. MLSE is very clearly willing to invest in the non-capped parts of the team. And it's something that when Kyle Lowry was on the Low Post podcast with Zach Lowe a couple weeks back, it was something that he highlighted. Zach asked him, you know, if you were pitching someone on Toronto, what would you say? And Lowry hit the usual points about the team and the organization in the city, the Canadian dollar being weak and inflating their contracts artificially. but one of the things he said was, you know, MLSE does things for the Raptors. And this is a big show of that. Like, that facility is expensive and those resources are not resources that all 30 teams would necessarily expend. So, you know, it's an impressive facility. I don't think any free agent's going to walk in and be like, oh yeah, this is the place because their practice facility. But, you know, if it helps with decision making and it helps, you know, over the teams that don't have their own practice facility and it, you know, and they use that practice facility better, only good things can happen.
Seeing that war room really makes me want to be a front office person.
I was such a geek in there, man.
Oh man, I can only imagine. Yeah, that seemed like a lot of fun. You can maybe check out Blake's post on the site. Just make sure you click on the podcast post here twice and it'll be good. Let's get to this Thaddeus Young thing. Mark Stein. Was it Mark Stein that reported it? I believe
so
it was someone.
Windhorst had last week, I think February 5th, he was on one of the Canadian radio stations, and he said Thad Young, Kenneth Fareed, Markieff Morris. And then today, I think Vincent Ellis threw out Ryan Anderson. Said Ellis is a Detroit guy, so he would probably be hearing this from a Detroit source who says, you know, Detroit's probably in on Ryan Anderson. They've been tied to him in free agency. So he's probably caught wind that the Raptors were maybe in on him too.
Right.
So basically all the power forwards on the market.
Yeah. And like for me, none of them are that sexy. I don't know. We've talked about Markieff Morris a million times on this podcast, and we've written a ton of things about him at our sites. And I don't know, last night's thing with Archie Goodwin on the sidelines probably doesn't help people's opinions of him very much. It doesn't help mine. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, I was always a guy who was apprehensive about the character issues anyway. I think that's just sort of proof that they exist, even though that is a pretty broken team right now. But yeah, like Thad Young, I was sort of intrigued by him. But then I realized like he's just stopped shooting threes this year. He's just not been as effective as he used to be. So I don't know. Like it's sorry, I'm getting messages from our editor.
Uh-oh.
Alex Wong, he's looking for you. Anyway, yeah, I don't know. Like Thad Young's been okay throughout his career. I don't think he, a lot like with Markieff Morris and all these other guys that we keep talking about, I don't think he appreciably raises the ceiling of the Raptors to the point where they're going to contend with the Cavs in a conference finals. I think they're going to lose that series no matter what they do, unless they add Al Horford for some reason, and that even then it's not a sure thing, right? And they probably still aren't favored.
Yeah, one of the nice things about, you know, the names that are getting floated, I think speaks to Masai Ujiri's philosophy on the trade market. So Thad Young, Kenneth Fareed, and Markieff Morris all have multiple years left of control and cost certainty at deals that are probably going to look pretty good as the cap goes up. I think Fareed is a terrible fit. And for my money, honestly, he has to be one of the most overrated players in the league by fans in general.
I don't think he's very good at all.
Yeah, like he's a high energy guy and he rebounds well and, you know, he gets those blocks out of nowhere, chase down blocks and stuff and a few dunks, but he can't shoot. He doesn't have much of a face up game. His post game's just okay. He's tops out as probably an average defender, and then he's a bad fit next to Valanciunas.
He's a slightly more talented Reggie Evans.
So I don't get that. Thad Young fits a little better just because I think he can play the three and the four and he can switch a little bit defensively. But the three-point shooting is a concern. You asked me 2 years ago, I would have loved Thad Young on the Raptors. But now with how much, you know, that shooting from your four man, and Thad does some other things well. He has a good face-up game. He has a few tricky post moves. He's a decent passer, you know, if not always a willing passer. So, I don't know. He does some things well, and he's better than Fareed defensively, I think. But still, like you've kind of alluded to, is he moving the needle much off of Patrick Patterson enough to give up other assets in the process and risk the chemistry? I'm not sure. I think in the case of Morris, you know, one thing that I've said is that's an off-season move, I think, because those character questions, when you have an entire off-season to acclimate a guy, you can kind of, you know, ease a guy into the situation and iron that out early. Now it's a huge risk. But in terms of talent, I think Morris is the most talented of all of these guys. It's just whether or not he taps into it. So I don't know. I know the Raptors would like to upgrade a power forward. It's just there are so, you said it right, there aren't sexy options.
Yeah. I agree with you that Markieff Morris is definitely the most talented of the group that they're talking about there. Ryan Anderson feels like just Luis Scola, who can actually shoot and will draw defensive attention when he's in the corner, but he's such a bad defender. And then you look at like Thad Young. I mean, let's be honest, with the way Scola's shooting threes, it's not like, you know, he's not drawing as much defensive attention as you would hope a guy who's shooting 44% from three would be drawing, right? Like he's still, most of his shots are unguarded. He's not like the spacing, you know, solution that people seem to think he is. And Thad Young will probably be very similar. He just hasn't shot threes at all this year. He's 5 for 23 on the season. So
yeah, that's the thing. That's one thing people sometimes misunderstand about floor spacing. It's not your 3-point percentage. I mean, it's great when you knock those looks down, because you're making a team pay for, you know, slagging off you a little bit. But floor spacing is about bending the defense and creating seams and more space for guys like DeRozan and Lowry who are trying to drive to the rim. Luis Scola doesn't change that. Teams would prefer a Luis Scola corner 3-point attempt to, you know, DeRozan or Lowry driving with less help coming in. So, you know, when you're talking about floor spacer, Patrick Patterson's a guy that can do that. Patrick Patterson makes teams pay when they overhedge on the pick and pop. if Thad Young's not doing that, Kenneth Faried's not doing that, Markieff Morris would do that out to the elbows maybe, and the fact that he can put it on the floor makes him a little bit more of a risk in that sense. But yeah, I mean, maybe, who knows, maybe the whole spacing floor thing is a little overstated, and a four who passes well would be just as good. But mm-hmm. with the way the Raptors play and the way they look right now, none of these options... I almost feel like everyone is overselling themselves on these options because everyone wants them to make a trade so bad.
Yeah. Just one last thing on Scholl and Patterson, then I want to ask you about
the playoffs. Yes, the answer is yes.
Yeah, okay. So the big issue is, like, you know, you don't want to break up the continuity of the bench, but at the same time, you can still play that Lowry and the bench mob unit that's been so good together, even if you start Patterson. Like, it's not like starting Patterson means you can't use that lineup in situations where you need it. Right?
Well, here's
like,
the thing. Teams are going to start to adjust, too. Teams are going to alter their rotations, and, you know, hanging your hat on a couple 3-minute stretches with a reserve unit that isn't going to play nearly as much in the playoffs, or if it does, it's going to be going up against more opposing starters because everyone else is going to shorten their rotation in the playoffs. You know, it's great that that group has been killing it so much, but you're going to play your game. You're going to play a playoff game with your starters out there for like 15 to 20 minutes. It would be nice if your starting lineup, if you could find a starting lineup that didn't get outscored, and the Raptors don't have one yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd flip Patterson to Scholl. I've said since opening night when it was a bit of a surprise that Scholl got the start, that Patterson's a more natural fit next to Valanciunas on both ends of the floor, and then Scholl is a more natural fit with a second unit that outside of Corey Joseph and sometimes TJ Ross can't really create for itself all that well, and he could play make a little bit from the elbows, you know, do his funky Luis Scola things that he does with that second unit, and then you could shelter his minutes a little bit. I guess you mentioned the continuity concern, which is a thing. The other concern is that for 2 years running now, Patrick Patterson has played some very sheltered minutes. Data from Nylon Calculus that measures how many opposing starters players are going up against. Last year and this year, Patterson is, you know, significantly below average in terms of how many starters he's going up against. And last year, at least, I know, I don't have the numbers in front of me for this year, but last year he shot much worse against opposing, like, starter-heavy units, which could just be noise, but, you know, maybe that's a risk that Dwayne Casey is worried about. I think they need to make a change, though, and maybe coming out of the All-Star break is the right time for that.
For sure. So just looking at the playoffs, we're talking about the trades and, like, whether a trade for one of these power forwards who's out there would appreciably raise the ceiling. I'm of the mind that I think this team can make the conference finals without adding anything. Maybe that's naive, maybe that's misguided, but I think the East is so flawed from top to bottom that I think it's a real possibility that the Raptors can do that without making one of these deals. I know they have all these draft picks to trade and they can't use them all because they have all these prospects already on the bench. And it'd be nice to be able to turn that Knicks pick into something really nice, but I don't know if that's realistic at this point. Like, do you think this team can make the conference finals without making a deal?
I think they can. I think, you know, there aren't moves out there that move the needle a ton for them. Like, I don't think Al Horford's walking through that door. So,
no.
You know, I think they have a shot. I think they're the second best team in the East, but I think that the gap is small enough between them and the next tier of teams that, you know, we're going to see based on matchups, right? You know, like, if they draw Chicago as the 2-7... Well, I mean, I'm just going to quit, I think. I'm not having that whole Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan thing on my shoulders for an entire playoff series. I'm not wearing that again. I still get retweets on that stupid thing. I'm not messing with a Raptors Bulls playoff series.
That's amazing.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe they could probably make the conference finals as is. The moves that are out there when you consider the chemistry risks and stuff probably only make a marginal improvement on those chances. But at the same time, if there's a deal that I'm not seeing or one that the Raptors like better than I do, you know, I'm all for that because how many times in this team's history have they had a window potentially to the conference finals?
Yeah, it's never happened. And for me, making it to the conference finals is all the success I need.
It would be the best season in franchise history.
Exactly. Like, we know that this isn't ending in a title with the Warriors and Spurs and Cavs and Thunder all out there. And I'm totally okay with that. Get to the conference finals, you know, ride some success. Maybe you build some clout in terms of I don't know, free agency as a destination. Who knows? If you make it to a conference finals. I think we've rambled on long enough here in this segment. We are going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to talk about the All-Star game and the All-Star weekend and Vince Carter and all this fun stuff that's going on in the city. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley with Raptors Republic's Blake Murphy. Just dropping a whole bunch of knowledge today that you rarely see on this podcast. we're going to run through the All-Star events here and try to pick our winners. It feels almost like it has an air of predictability like the regular season does almost, because Zach LaVine seems like such an obvious favorite right now for the dunk contest. Although I think that's going to be a really good... I love the field for that. So we'll get to that in a sec. There's the Shooting Stars is gone, of course, which is a little disappointing if you're Chris Bosh. Not so disappointing if you like riveting television. And so let's start with the Skills Challenge. This year they got big men for the first time. Are you down with that idea?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I like that they have like I'm assuming they're going to do it as like a big man bracket and a guard bracket. I love it.
See, I want them to do. I want them to mix it. I want it to just be like.
I don't think they want a case where the guards like win every matchup.
I guess so. Yeah, that's fair. Anyway,
my ideas are. Boogie's gonna choke someone out if that happens.
I mean, so do you think this is even a contest between the guards and the and the bigs? Because like, I don't know.
Boogie's winning it.
You think so? Yep. If I did, oh man, I don't know if Boogie. He's not fast enough. I don't think.
Doesn't matter. He's winning it.
I guess. I don't even know what the course is going to look like, right? I mean, it's different every year.
I think, I don't know. I think DeMarcus Cousins is winning it.
All right.
I don't really know why. Like, the odds, I looked up the Vegas odds today, and, like, all the guards are favored over the bigs, except for Draymond. Draymond's got the same odds as Jordan Clarkson and CJ McCollum. But Isaiah Thomas is the favorite. And then, you know, Towns, Anthony Davis, and Cousins have long odds, but... I'm laying all my extra blogger money is going on DeMarcus Cousins.
I guess, yeah. Extra blogger money. That's not
all my disposable blogger income.
I'm not going with DeMarcus. I think he's too slow and his shot is a little unreliable. He's had some games this year where he's been like 5-for-20. Man, as great as he is.
Too slow and unreliable shot. I thought you were talking about your editor Dan Reynolds for a second.
Oh man. When's that one-on-one game happening, by the way?
I don't know. It's kind of like, I think it's going to be like the Matt Damon on Kimmel thing where it just never actually happens. Although I got a bit of a scouting report on Dan today. He went and he hooped with Kareem earlier, so a little scouting report. I'm ready.
I hope you answer my question for your mailbag that you're doing this weekend.
I will. The mailbag's going up on Friday. I'm like halfway done it. So
just stop plugging your website. Anyway. okay, I'm not going DeMarcus. Draymond is the pick I like because, I mean, he's sort of a hybrid guard forward anyway. He runs show for the Warriors half the time. Although Davis is interesting because he used to be a point guard. He kind of has those skills too. I think my pick is Draymond just because I think the shot will be easiest for him. Although Isaiah's tough too. I don't know, this is tough.
I
don't want to pick a guard because that's boring.
I have a bold prediction here.
What's that?
Emmanuel Mudiay becomes the first person to ever commit a turnover in the competition.
Oh, man. Poor Emmanuel Mudiay. I like that guy, man.
Yeah, me too. He's been much, much better lately. The whole Nuggets team has.
Yeah. Also, read James Herbert's piece on Emmanuel Mudiay at CBS.
Read everything James Herbert writes.
Yeah, he's pretty good at his job at writing stuff. He makes you feel pretty bad when you read things. So do you, actually.
No, that's not true.
Yeah, okay, I'm just pandering anyway. All right, I got Draymond, you got Cousins, you're going to be wrong. Let's get to the three-point challenge. Is it just Steph? Like, is there any reason to pick anyone but Steph?
Well, the thing is, Steph's the favorite, but, like, he didn't win several years in a row before winning last year. The odds favor him, but, like, not significantly. I don't know. Will and I did our – like, Will and I were recording ours earlier, and, like, we both picked Steph. To the point, and like we both picked LaVine too, obviously, to the point where we were just picking like who's gonna come second. Because, like, how do you, like, it's a 3-point shootout and random stuff will happen, but like, how do you pick against Steph Curry?
Yeah, I think my dark horse is Devin Booker. He's been so good this year for the Suns, another awesome rookie. I was listening, I think it might have been the starters talking about Lowry and Redick and how they sort of leap forward when they shoot, and that might kind of throw them off.
Well, Redick had a bunch of lane violations last year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he like I think he said he set the record for long twos in the 3-point competition. Yeah. So
I like Redick. I think he'll adjust. He's shooting like almost 50% on the season. He's my guy other than Curry.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, J.J. Redick's my guy in all regards, so.
J.J. I'm so happy he's okay. He got hurt last night, and he apparently is all good. So we'll see him in. So, yeah, I'm going Devin Booker just to be fun. I'm not picking Steph.
All right, I'll go Redick then.
All right, cool. Now we go to the dunk contest. I really like this field. I don't know. Are you a fan of the Zach LaVine, yeah. Aaron Gordon, Will Barton, Andre Drummond?
Yeah, I like it. I wish they had expanded it to six that they could have coerced Wiggins to be in it, and then you could have thrown Norm Powell in too. I think Powell would be really good in a dunk contest.
Is he like a big enough name to do it though?
But is the thing. It is like you don't always need big names if you expand the field a little bit. He'd be too small a name for a four-man dunk contest, but a six-man in Toronto, you could totally justify that.
I guess like you look at the 2000 dunk contest that we're going to talk about in a second here with Vince, and it was like Vince, T-Mac, Larry Hughes, who wasn't quite what he became, and then Jerry Stackhouse, Steve Francis.
Wait, what do you remember Larry Hughes becoming? Because to me, he was like pre-Waiters.
I guess he was like a decent player for Cleveland, wasn't he? Yeah, the Wizards.
He was fine at a couple places. There, like one of the like early era sports blogs, like 2008-ish, maybe. There was a site called No, like something along the lines of No Larry Hughes, don't shoot that.
I think he was.
Yeah, he was.
Didn't he have
was
a couple really good years with Washington. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. but still, like Larry Hughes was a name that people knew, and he was a double-digit point scorer. He's not Norman Powell, who's played like six games. So who you got in the dunk contest?
Nobody's beating Zach LaVine.
I know.
He put on the best performance since Vince and said that he didn't use his best dunk.
Which is absurd. I don't know if I believe him. But
Carl Anthony Towns actually tweeted out tonight. He said, just left Zach LaVine slam dunk practice and OMG, grab your popcorn because he making a movie on Saturday with a little... like film emoji and then a camera emoji.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to pick against LaVine. I mean, I was watching back that Vince. Sorry, it wasn't the Vince dunk contest. They were just replaying a bunch today on NBA TV Canada, and they had the J.R. Smith, Josh Smith, Amari Stoudemire, Chris Anderson one. And J.R. Smith did it behind the back. It took him like three tries, and it looked really awkward. Like Zach LaVine did that in his sleep last year.
Yep,
it was crazy.
And didn't use his best dunk.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how he can improve what he did and just make it look so simple. That's the thing, right? It's just like he glided through the air like so easily. It was freaky. I think we're going LaVine there. Who's your runner-up?
Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, I think me too. Although Will Barton's interesting to me.
Yeah, and Will Lou made some good points about Andre Drummond. So I don't know. I like Aaron Gordon a lot, though. Gordon has a track record of like pretty impressive dunk contest dunks from like high school and college. Mm-hmm. Aaron Gordon for me, he's a freak.
Are you pro big man in dunk contest?
I'm pro one big man.
Yes,
I like one big man, one little man, and two wings. In this case, like there isn't really a little man, which is fine.
Yeah, that's totally okay.
The D League dunk contest has an interesting little man. John Jordan, 5'10", Raptors 905. When he was in college, he used to poster big men on the regular.
Really?
Yeah. So
wow. I'll have to look up a mixtape or something. Yeah. Do you want to talk about Vince a little bit?
Yeah.
Because 16 years ago today, apparently, was his triumphant dunk contest title in Golden State. It was on NBA TV Canada again today. I watched it. It was I just don't think we appreciate how awesome it was to have Vince Carter with the Raptors. And, like, that dunk contest alone and just, like, that era alone, like, how much different would, like, the entire Raptors history be if Carter wasn't even here? Like, it might not even be a team, right? Like, it could have relocated somewhere if Carter wasn't here, you think?
I don't know. The market's probably too big, like... And I guess like what is the alternative? Like do they keep Anton Jamison or do they choose T-Mac over Vince? You know, there are different ways that could have played out. I think they probably would have been fine, but like there are probably a lot of fans, especially like in my age range, that like aren't nearly as hardcore without Vince hooking them in. The Vince dunk contest was like the first time I ever watched basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't really start following the Raptors until like 2002, 2003 time frame. Mm-hmm. And like that year was the first time I was like, oh, like this is cool. I'll watch this on the side. So yeah, that was huge for me. Like he was instrumental in me like becoming a basketball fan. So that's part of why I think I've been more forgiving of him than most people in terms of like Vince's legacy with the Raptors, just because like I don't know if I'm even a basketball fan without Vince.
I'm definitely not, man. Like I've talked about it on here before. I was at a playoff game in that 0-1 series against the Sixers. Like I was like 7 years old and I'll never forget it. It was what hooked me. And like having Vince around was, we were so, so lucky in that dunk contest. Do you want to rank his dunks from that dunk contest?
Yeah. Let's go through. Yeah, let's do it.
So he had 5 dunks in that dunk contest because it was a weird setup. There were 6 guys in it. First off, before we get to them, the jerseys the Pistons were wearing were like these maroon weird things with the cartoon ass horse on the front and just awful numbering and lettering. What the hell was up with the late 90s jerseys?
I don't know, man. So many teams tried weird things.
I mean, Steve Francis had the ugly cartoon rocket in that thing, and it wasn't even the worst jersey.
Yeah, like I remember my high school had like an outdated Sprite machine with Grant Hill in that Pistons jersey. So it's like iconic for me, like coming out of practice or gym class and like, oh, there's Grant Hill. The Sonics had those kind of like dark red jerseys at that point too. It was, I don't know if teams were just trying new things, I guess, like really cartoony things.
Yeah. Didn't quite work.
I still kind of like the blue jerseys the Pistons had around that time. Like, I didn't like the logo still.
Teal. Oh, 90s teal is the worst.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I like those ones better than the maroon ones. And, like, I hate the logo, but that color's all right. Maybe. I don't know. I would never wear it.
Not even ironically?
No, I don't think I could pull off ironic. I think I would just look like an idiot. No one would really be excited. Like, oh, that guy's wearing that jersey, like, to be funny. They would just be like, oh, that guy's a moron.
I'm really excited to wear my Bakersfield Jam t-shirt out this weekend.
Why do you? How did you get a Bakersfield Jam t-shirt?
Bought it from the D-League store.
There you go. I got a free Raptors 905 t-shirt.
Not bad. They just give out free stuff to their media?
On the opening day, there were like extra t-shirts. So.
Right. Okay, let's get to ranking these dunks from Vince. He had the 5 dunks. He started off with the 360 windmill. He followed that up with a 180 windmill from behind the back of the basket. He then, I think the next one was his between the legs from T-Mac. Or no, the next one was his, it was. It was the between the legs from T-Mac. The first one of the final round was when he dunked his arm. And the final one was a two-hander from just inside the free throw line. Go 5-1, Blake.
Like worst to best?
Yes.
Okay, worst was the free throw one. I mean, it's cool that he did a two-hander and he was trying to shout out Dr. J, but I think he knew he had won it.
Yeah.
Next. Shit. This is so tough, man. Okay. Wait, what are we... Oh, man. I guess the 180 windmill from behind the basket? Like, how is that his fourth best... How are any of these the fourth best dunk that someone did?
Let alone fourth best in an entire dunk contest, let alone one person's dunks.
And like the arm one I don't think holds up as well, but like at the time that must have been insane. I don't think like if someone busts that out now it's that impressive. But like he was the first person I think to come from behind the backboard to those two are 3-4 in some order, which is insane because either one of them probably would have won the dunk contest. and then I'll go the 360 windmill. Like the way he like came out with so much swag and just like first try, bam, like a perfect dunk. He could not have pulled that dunk off better. And like it,
you only had, you only had like one try in this one too.
Yeah. And like he had the power. He said too, I think you got one miss. Cause he made a point in his oral history that Dave Zarum did at Sportsnet the other day. He made a point of saying like he had a no miss mentality in his head. But, like, he walked out there, first dunk, nailed it perfectly with, like he hammered it home too. It was so fluid. It was just perfect. And then the between the legs one was like the first time anyone had done that. And to hear Vince tell it, like, it wasn't in the plan. He just saw it in a magazine cover. Him and T-Mac hadn't practiced it. He just like imagine having the control over your body and the confidence in yourself to just step out and just be like, oh, this dunk that I've never done before that I saw in a picture of a magazine and it gave me the idea, and I'm trusting someone to throw a pass who's never practiced it with me before. Yeah, I'll do that. It's crazy. And like now some of the very best dunk contest dunks since then have built off of that and like involved the between the legs. Like it was an entirely new thing that opened up the Vince Carter dunking tree that came off of that dunk is insane.
Yeah, no kidding. So what do you have the between the legs as number one then?
And then the 360 windmill to open is number two.
Okay.
I guess I'll go behind the backboard, number three, the arm in is number four, and then the free throw is number five.
Okay, so I'm a bit different. I have the free throw one as five. I have the 180 behind the basket as four, which is crazy, as we talked about. Number three for me is the between the legs, even with the fact that it was never done before, and even with the fact that you had the, it's over call at the afterwards. Like, I loved the opening 360 windmill dunk. I thought that was fantastic. And just like you said, so much power, so much grace when he did it. And just like to emphatically open it up with like, yeah, okay, do this now. Like Kenny Smith the entire night was like, I can't give anyone a 10 because Vince did that. Like it was absurd. And I don't know. I'm partial to the arm dunk. I just think that's so insane. And I think Zach Harper did something really good for CBS last year about this exact thing. And Vince's description of the arm dunk was pretty great too. And like, I don't know, the audible gasp you hear after he does it, where no one really realized what's happened, but like a couple people do, and then they show the replay and everyone's just like, oh my god, like what? And Vince is just like smiling. I don't know, something about that one really gets to me. I think that's just absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's, oh man, I would bet if you asked like 10 different people, you'd get five different orders.
Yeah, I think with that one too, it's like, how terribly could that have ended?
Yeah.
Like, that could have been a horrifying injury, but no, he had so much control and so much strength to just do it. And oh man, that dunk is crazy. I think that'll do it for our dunk contest talk. Let's get to some questions here. We have a bunch from mostly friends of the show who usually send in questions, but we got
a
couple.
Are they being assholes? Or are they being legit?
No. There's a couple. A couple of just funny ones here and there.
Oh, I see. I'm getting called a traitor by my own website.
Well, so, okay, this is my first question. I see the traitor, and then the next tweet from Raptors Republic is just a heart. I thought that was like, because you guys are famous for your intertweeting of like who, you don't never know who's on the account.
Yeah. I would guess that those ones were Will.
Okay. I thought it was like you having, it was either you having an internal crisis saying that you're a traitor, but then.
No.
Yeah, okay, so wasn't that. Or I thought it was Will saying traitor, and then you giving the love.
No, neither one of those was me.
So I guess it's Will just the traitor, and then immediately apologizing for it. Okay, cool. So this one's from Will Liu. Who's the better podcast host, your boy Will Liu or this Clint Capella stan over here? That's me. I like Clint Capella. I thought he should have been in the dunk contest.
That would have been cool. He's a good dunk contest fit.
We'll leave that one because I don't want to get heartbroken.
No, it's you. I'm on your podcast right now. The answer is you.
You do a weekly podcast with Will.
But I'm the host.
Okay, I guess. All right, screw you, Will. Yeah. Next one's up from Arun. What is Blake's favorite pizza place in Toronto and why?
I want to say Pizza Pizza just to piss everyone off. I'm a King Slice guy.
Where's King Slice?
It's there are two locations on the west side.
Okay.
Yeah, I like they load up the pizza pretty well with toppings. It's like heavy, heavy cheese. They have one that has like jalapenos and mushrooms and spicy arrabbiata. And I don't know, there are a couple of different good ones. I've only had it a handful of times because I've always lived outside of their delivery radius.
Right.
But when I'm on the West End, I like make a point of it. It was actually my plan today was to, I was out in that area. My plan was to get a slice, and then I ended up going for breakfast instead and wasn't hungry. And now I'm like panicking to figure when I'm going to get Kingslice in this weekend. The answer is probably not.
How close is it to Enercare Center, do you know?
Not particularly close. Nothing is particularly close to Enercare Center, right?
Yeah, that's like a weird one, eh?
They might. They probably deliver that far.
Maybe. That'd be nice. I mean, for me, like, I don't live in Toronto, so I don't really know all the good hole-in-the-wall places. When I lived in Ottawa, that place was great for pizza. But, like, I don't know. I've become more and more just give me whatever pizza. Like, it's all just pizza to me. I like Pizza YOLO. That's a good chain. It's better than Pizza Pizza. As much as I joke about Pizza Pizza, Pizza Pizza isn't very good. And I don't know. There were some places in Milano Pizzeria in Ottawa. If you're ever in Ottawa, if you're near Carleton University, it's just a nice little walk down Sunnyside Avenue. And it's just that is a place to go if you're ever in Ottawa for pizza. But other than that, like pizza is pizza. It's just dough, meat, and cheese, right?
Yeah. See, I'm a little spoiled because in Cambridge, Kitchener-Waterloo, there's a chain called Twice the Deal. And the pizza's not great. it's probably, like, it's within a standard deviation of average. I would argue on the north side of average, like on the good side. but you get a bunch of it for really cheap. So then you're not dealing with the Toronto thing of, like, yeah, pizza is priced almost on a meritocracy where, like, the good pizza is expensive and the bad pizza is slightly less expensive. you get, like, a really good helping for a small amount of money, especially if you're doing, like, a group thing. I think you get 2 large 3 toppings, a pound of wings, garlic bread, and a couple pops for, like, $30, tip included.
Oh, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, and that's delivery, like, with a okay tip. Right. Like, not like a baller tip, but, you know, like, I just finished undergrad tip.
Yeah. Well, there's a place right across the street from Milano Pizza in Ottawa called Easy Peasy Pizza. And that place, you could walk in and get, like, 3 larges for, I don't know, like, $22 or something like that. It was insane. But it was only a walk-in deal. And it was, like, you either had to eat that crap pizza or you get Milano's, which was a little more expensive, but, like, a million times more delicious. So, yeah. I mean, pizza, again, is pizza. Pizza is not great, but whatever. Let's move on to another question. This one is from, I got to scroll back down. This one comes from Keith Wall. He asks, what's the best move of the deadline? Anderson, Morris, Fareed, or none? We've already kind of talked about this. My answer is not Fareed.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I don't I'm not a big Ryan Anderson fan, for the Raptors. I think people underestimate the defensive impact, especially like if you swapped him out in some sort of package for Scola, it's one thing. But if you're giving up Patterson, I'm not sure that Anderson adds enough offensively to commit to, okay, we're going to have 3 of our 4 front court players are slow and 2 of them are bad defenders. And then 1 of them is Jonas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like Morris is such a combustible element. I think the next question is about Thad Young too. So like, I guess my answer to all of them is that none of them really move the needle that much. I'm so conflicted because like I'm talent above all else. Like if you ask me these
you
questions,
you want to see a deal happen too, right? Like it just would seem cool. Yeah. It would seem like it would just be fun, but
yeah, I'm not sure any of the names, make enough of a difference to like really get too worked up one way or the other. I don't want Fareed for certain. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'll sell myself on any of them. And like each name mentioned would be a slight offensive upgrade at least, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure they'd be an overall upgrade. You know, there's value too. Like the draft happens before free agency, but like that pick's still going to have trade value.
Exactly. At the draft, too. Like, who knows what you can do.
Yeah, so it's not like this is the last chance to get utility out of that pick.
For sure. Or maybe they just try to trade some of these prospects away at some point.
These prospects that have no trade value?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah, it's or just, like, cut bait with Anthony Bennett and open up a roster spot.
I've kind of written that a couple times. I think if he's not included in a deal at the deadline for salary matching, I think there's a chance he gets cut.
And Ronald Roberts would come up?
Depending on if they do anything. you know, they might wait it out for the veteran buyout season. Like if guys are bought out by, I think, March 1st, they're playoff eligible.
Right. Right.
So they might see what happens on that front. And then, yeah, you'd have Ronald Roberts as a possibility, Axel Toupon as a possibility as a multi-position defender. And then, you know, a slew of other guys around the league that could become available. I wanted so badly for Bennett to rebound and work his way into being like a capable role player. And like, it's a small sample at the NBA level and at the D League level so far, but there's not much there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it hurts me to say it.
Yeah, I know. It sucks. Like, you were really hoping for some sort of, you know, redemption story with him this year, and it's just not there. Like, I just don't know what he does well.
Yeah, and if they cut him, no one's going to claim him on waivers, and then you can make him an in-season affiliate with the 905. So he's still, like, his development is still under your umbrella. It's just a matter of then, you know, could he mentally deal with getting cut again? I don't really know.
Yeah. Poor guy. Just to touch quickly on this question from Jeff Campbell about Thad Young and if he's the power forward needed to guard Bosch, Love, Aldridge, Sullinger, etc.
Well, Sullinger doesn't belong in that class. I'm not making a trade to stop Jared Sullinger.
No, he will just fall over himself.
Yeah. You know what I'll do? I'll send King Slice to Jared Sullinger's hotel room. He'll slow himself down.
So if I was to rank the four guys that we're talking about here in terms of like how much I would like to see them on the Raptors, let's do that like really quickly. I think for me it would be, I think it would go Thad Young, Markieff Morris, Ryan Anderson, then rounded out with Kenneth Reed.
Are we assuming they're all the exact same price?
Sure, yeah. Let's say it takes the whatever Patterson and a pick to get him, or whatever. No, it's none of it's good.
No, like it. I keep wondering if, like, instead of Patterson, maybe, like, a Scola Johnson or, like, yeah. Scola plus Noguera and a pick.
But then what's the incentive for the team to do it? Like, the other
yeah,
team?
Yeah, like, expiring contracts don't mean anything anymore. And, like,
especially an expiring $2 million
contract. And most of these teams would just, like, buy Scola out anyway.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, unless you're including with Patterson, maybe you can get away with giving up your own pick, whereas if it's Scola and Johnson or whatever.
Yeah, I'm okay with that, though. I'd rather keep Patterson in the low pick.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well.
Yeah. Draft picks are food stamps, man.
They are. And it's not a very good draft either, so. And people need to.
I think people are coming around on it a little bit. But, yeah? Like, I guess it's a good indication that guys are jumping all over the place. That
yeah.
It might be good. Like, we don't really know. 2 years ago, we thought that class was going to be awesome, and it's been hot garbage. Yeah. And then last year's class wasn't
people were high on it, but mostly just like a lot of guys who did one thing really, really yeah. well, it just translates into a really good role in the NBA. But a lot of guys have surpassed that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's going to look like a good one down the line because.
Yeah.
Oh, Towns, Porzingis.
Booker.
All of them. Norm Powell.
Miles Turner's doing Powell. Stuff.
No, I loved Miles Turner. Justice Winslow, yeah. Stanley Johnson. Like,
I love Stanley Johnson so much. Like that game against the Raptors when they were here, I thoroughly enjoyed watching him play defense.
I'm in the minority. I still think Justice Winslow is better, or is going to be better.
I think that's fair. I don't know.
I'm a believer that his jump shot will come around.
That's the minority, though? I didn't know that
was. Well, he went later in the draft, right?
Well, I think most people thought that was incorrect. I think most people thought Johnson was going to go behind Winslow, but I don't know. I like them both. They're both pretty awesome. So do this quick impromptu ranking and we'll wrap this
yeah, I'm, up. Yeah, I have the same ranking as you. Okay, if you ask me in the offseason, I probably flip Morris and Thad Young because I'm more of a believer in those challenge trades in the offseason. But right now, I think Thad Young's a guy who could fit the locker room pretty seamlessly.
Right. Final question from Will. Real question. How does the Markieff bench scrap increase or decrease the chances of Toronto trading for him?
It doesn't change it. The Raptors know who he is at this point, and it's not like nobody was surprised when that happened. So I don't think it changes much. There's also the fact that, like, I mean, it just kind of, if anyone was selling themselves on Markieff's, like, three games post-Hornacek, like, you can let it go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think that three games post-Hornacek just tells you all you need to know about Markieff Morris.
Yeah, but it does. It also tells you, like, all you need to know about Markieff Morris because he put up a 30-11-6.
Yeah,
Like, the Raptors don't have a power forward who's putting up 30, 11, and 6 ever. They might not combine for a 30, 11, and 6 this year. So, like, that's the thing, right? Like, he comes with enormous risk that I probably don't think is worth taking in the middle of the season if you're taking away a guy like Patterson. But, like, his upside is there.
It's very good, yeah. We've talked about this enough. Let's wrap this up. Let's get to our episode sponsor. You picked it this week, and it's a depressing one, I'll tell you that.
Awesome.
It's it's not a very good one in terms of memories to draw up. I have absolutely none, so I'll be relying on you for this one. We'll be back in just a second here on the headquarters. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley wrapping things up here with Blake Murphy. We're going to get into our episode sponsor. This week's episode is brought to you by Will Solomon, brought to you by Blake Murphy himself. He suggested him. I don't know why. Will Solomon's career line with the Raptors is thoroughly unimpressive. He played 39 games. He averaged just over 5 points, about 3 assists. Started 9 games, which those games probably didn't end well. What are your memories of Will Solomon, Blake? I think you mentioned that you kind
of
hate him.
Oh, the fondest of memories with Will Solomon. So that season, that was my first season after undergrad. So, like, I was working, like, and had money for the first time. Not significant money, but, like, a little bit. I went to his first start as a Raptor. It was...
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was against the Heat. And it was like the sixth game of the season, I think, or his sixth game of the season or something. And he had 15 points and 11 dimes. And so, like, this guy out of nowhere, he hadn't played more than like 15 minutes in a game yet. He had been out of the league for so long. And then, like, he played his rookie year in 2001 and then, like, was all over the world afterwards. He was like, he was Anthony Parker. On paper, he just wasn't actually good. But, like, his first career start, this out-of-nowhere basketball vagabond guy, and all of my buddies who I watched basketball with were sold on Will Solomon at this point. And, like, I just did not like the guy. I was like, this guy's trash. That was the luckiest game ever. And, like, to that point in the season, he was shooting, like, almost 60%, I think, super early. The next game... He started and he just like chucked like crazy. I just brought his lineup. He was 5 for 13 with 7 turnovers. And then like went back to the bench to like 3 games later, he played a minute. So like he's one of those funny examples in the lean Raptors years of like a guy who only needed to give you an inch for fans to just like buy in because like, please, please be the next guy. Please, you know, push Roko Jukic for minutes. And then he got traded before the season was over. Like he didn't even make it the year. They sold him to the Kings and then the Kings waived him before the end of the season.
All right. So I have absolutely no memories of Will Solomon, so I'm not even going to try. We're just going to introduce you to our game here. Have you listened? Why would you have listened to the podcast? We play a game at the end of every show where we go back to a random Raptors game in history, and you have to name who played in that game for the Raptors.
God.
So we're going to – this might be too easy. We're going to go to that game that you went to. I just pulled it up here on Basketball Reference. This game took place on November 16th, 2008, Raptors and Heat. The Raptors won 107-96, as I'm sure you know. They moved to 5-4 that season. Was this the first year with Jermaine O'Neal? I guess he was only here 1 year. So yeah, this was the start of the Jermaine O'Neal.
Spoiler, Jermaine O'Neal was in the game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. I figured you would have known that anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, there were 9 Raptors who played in this game. The name who you can.
Okay. I mentioned a couple. I mentioned Solomon, Anthony Parker, and Roko Jukic.
Yep.
I guess that means it was a Calderon year, but he was out. That must have been who he was starting for. Or was it TJ Ford year?
No, it was a Calderon.
Okay.
It
doesn't matter anyway. He didn't play. So Bosch was still there.
Yep.
Bargs was still there.
Yep.
You gave me J.O.
Yes. So that's the starting 5.
Okay. Plus Jukic off the bench, right?
Yes.
2008, 2009. Capono.
Yes.
How long do people normally take?
Normally, it takes like 10 minutes.
Okay,
so
I thought it was like
you're
stalling a little
right
bit.
No, dude.
Was Joey Graham? Was Joey Graham still there?
No.
No Joey Graham. Okay. Chris Humphries.
Yes, and there's one left.
I know Nathan Jawai was on the team that year, but there's no way he played that early in the season.
No. We did a Nathan Jawai game a couple of days ago.
Really?
The game he scored his only Raptors points.
Oh, man. Ozzie Shaq. Okay. What do I have? Eight?
Yeah, you got one left.
Okay, and Calderon was out. So they had J.O. that year, so that means they didn't have Marion until later that year, right? They flipped J.O. right away.
So no Marion. Yeah, Marion.
No Marion.
Marion was on the Heat that night, actually.
Oh. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, this is probably terrible radio I'm leading to right now.
That's totally okay. Do you need a hint?
Yeah.
He's a wing.
Okay. What's his name? Jamario Moon.
Yes, you got it. That was that's the record time, I think. Usually it takes two guys like 5 to 10 minutes to do it. So you and like many hints. So you killed that.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, this Heat team is kind of depressing. It was Wade, Haslam, Marion, Michael Beasley, Mario Chalmers, Daquan Cook, Chris Quinn. I don't remember him.
Oh, he's a coach now.
Is he really?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if he's an assistant with the Heat or a coach in the D League or something, but he's definitely coaching somewhere.
Joel Anthony, Yakuba Diawara. Don't remember him.
Oh, French guy. There were rumors that he was coming back to the league this summer.
What the hell? You know so much more than I do. Mark Blount, that's 2 weeks in a row Mark Blount's been on a team the Raptors played in one of these things.
Yeah.
He was on the – we did a game with Boston last week where it was like Yuri Welsh was one of the – he like led the team in minutes.
Man. And then Mark lookalike.
Oh, wait, I got to pull this up now. I never even thought about that. Yuri Welsh. A little bit, eh? Yeah. That's pretty damn close. All right.
Yeah, I just looked it up. So that was the year that they flipped J.O. for Sean Marion later.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely did a game later in this season, a couple weeks. I think that was the July game because we had Marion on the team.
Marcus Banks would have been on the team.
Yes, he was.
Good God.
You might be the best person at this game.
No, if you went back too far though, because like I didn't start watching until maybe 2003. So if you went back too far,
right,
you'd lose me.
I don't know. We've done most of the games we've done, at least at the start, were like ones that you see on NBA TV all the time, so they were pretty easy. But like the ones we've done the last few weeks have been so obscure and random.
Good God, Marcus Banks was bad.
Are you just basketball referencing Marcus Banks at this
point? Yeah, he was hot garbage. He lasted on the Raptors for a long time and like never played.
These teams, man, they were a treasure to watch, man.
Yeah.
This is like almost at the era where I checked out for a bit. It was like 2009-2010. Like after Bosch left, it kind of checked out for a couple years. So
man, he lasted parts of three seasons.
That's insane.
Yeah, like they got him in the Marion deal. He played a full season barely playing, and then they traded him in the Jared Bayless-Stojakovic deal.
Right.
Which that would be a fun wrinkle off this game, is like to try to guess who was involved in like these shitty old Raptors trades, like the Marion trade and the Stojakovic trade. Because like no one would ever remember that David Anderson was on the Raptors.
Yeah, or like who did the Raptors trade? Like the Luke Ridnour trade and like the Tomislav Zubcic.
Oh, yeah.
Like
Tomislav Zubcic killing it in the D-League.
Is he really?
Yeah.
We got to have a D-League podcast with you at some point.
Oh, God. Nobody wants to listen to that.
I'm surprised people want to listen to this. If you made it to the end of this, like, good on you. Thanks so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate it. We were starving for a co-host today, and you answered the call pretty quickly. Have fun doing All-Star Weekend stuff. Where can people find your work?
Raptors Republic.
Of course. And on Twitter and everything?
Yeah, and soon when... Oh, I'm at Blake Murphy ODC. And then soon I'll create a Vine account just for what I'm going to do to Dan Reynolds. Let it live on and in for me. Also, I just looked at that. I may have overstated Tomislav Zubcic's D-League dominance. He's averaging 8.5 points.
Oh, well, I mean, that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can average that in the D-League, you can... probably not do much else.
But imagine what he'd average in the NBL.
Oh, the NBL. Funny story about the NBL. You know there was an Oshawa team, right?
I guess.
I was doing like a...
Oshawa. Me any city and I'd believe they had a team.
There was an NBL team in Oshawa for one season. And I was doing an internship at CTV News in Toronto. And they sent me to this press conference for the Oshawa Power unveiling this team. They lasted a season. But at this press conference was... Is it Jermaine Anderson, the Canadian basketball player?
Rock.
Yeah, he was there. Sherm Hamilton was there. A bunch of very obscure Canadian basketball folks were there. So that's my experience with the NBL.
I don't know anything about the NBL.
It was, I think it still exists.
I know that Ashton Smith, who plays for the 905, played in the NBL last year.
Right.
That's about it.
Do you know who Mark Strickland is? He was a former NBA center, journeyman backup center. He was the coach of the Oshawa team. I did a profile on him when I was in second year at school. That's my deepest dive into the NBL.
That is deep.
And Drew Ebanks, who now has his own website, was the PR guy for that team at that time.
Player Drew Ebanks?
Drew Ebanks played?
Wait, who? Oh, I'm thinking Devin Ebanks.
Oh, yeah. No, Drew Ebanks. He's the guy on point basketball.
Yeah, that's where I know that name. Yeah. No, I was thinking Devin Ebanks.
So he was the PR guy for the Oshawa Power team. And so no one cares about this and everyone's turned this off. But thank you so much for listening to The Headquarters. Find Blake's work, as he said, at Raptors Republic. He's on the radio from time to time. I know he will be on TSN 1050 at some point this weekend talking some All-Star. He will be he'll be all over the place. So keep up with his work there. Follow him on Twitter at Blake Murphy ODC. Thanks so much, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man.
All right, man. And as for me, you can follow me at Woodley Sean. You can follow the site at Raptors HQ. iTunes for the podcast. Rate, review, subscribe, all that fun stuff. We really appreciate any feedback, positive or negative. And I'm assuming there's probably a lot of negative anyway. thank you so much. And we will talk to you next week here on The Headquarters.